You've just tuned into Outdoor News Radio, a weekly showcase of the top outdoors writers and experts in Minnesota and across the region. I'm Outdoor News Managing Editor Rob Dreeslein, and I'm honored to have you join us for the next hour as we break down hunting, fishing, and natural resources topics affecting your ability to recreate in the Western Great Lakes and beyond. Our guests might challenge you occasionally, but we promise to entertain you while we're at it. Don't go away, because if you love this state's fine outdoor scene, you'll love Outdoor News Radio. Today's show is brought to you by Ducks Unlimited, the leading conservation group for restoring habitat for waterfowl and all things wild to benefit the nation's hunters. Howdy, folks. Welcome to another week of Outdoor News Radio. Rob Dreeslein, happy to be with you for the next hour. We will talk a little bit with DNR Enforcement. Captain Aaron Carrier will be with us to talk about a new app the agency has to help you turn in poachers if you see something illegal going on out of doors. Then Eric Morkin. Eric is he's the web editor here at Outdoor News. He's also a pretty hardcore archery deer hunter. He's going to give us some tips for this weekend's bow hunting opener, again, which kicks off this Saturday, September 14th, as well as several small game seasons like rough grouse. So there's a lot to talk about this week. And to help me kick things off is Tim Spielman, editor at Outdoor News, a man with trail cameras and seeing some action out there, huh?
Yeah, I have. I was going to say, are you having Eric on for a half hour? Because you might have to.
Nah, it'll just be one regular segment. But yeah, Eric, he loves him some bow hunting, doesn't he?
Yeah. Sometimes I think he's going to overstimulate himself with deer hunting, but that's all right. It's fun to see someone who is that into it.
Yeah.
If anybody's into it, Eric is into it. So
yeah, young guy, you bet.
Yeah, that's great for him. I put out a trail camera. I normally don't, and I don't know if we've talked about it before, but I had really good luck back in July with pictures of bucks, big, small. Otherwise, one that shows up yet is a one-antler deer. Who knows what happened to him, but that one antler is a solid antler. You know, maybe next year he'll have a full set, but I had fewer deer photos this last time, but amazingly, I had turkeys, I had raccoons, several raccoon visits, a coyote passing by, and then I had a bobcat with something in its mouth. And what I've determined is that it's a rabbit. And there's, in my neck of the woods, there are so many rabbits, and it was just kind of cool to see nature in action with a bobcat and dragging a dead rabbit past the camera.
Nature abhors a vacuum, and if there's too many rabbits, that means there probably needs to be a predator, and by golly, a bobcat found his way in there and found some food. My dad gets bobcat images down in southeast Minnesota. I think they're a pretty successful species in this part of the world.
Yeah, for sure. And it is cool to see these shots. I've never been a huge trail cam person, but in the past few years, it's really fun just to see what's out there that you don't see.
Yeah.
You take a walk out there during the daylight and there's nothing around. So it does come to life, and most often at night with a lot of these animals, but they're around and it's cool to see if they are.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk a little news here, Tim. We did get a press release from the DNR late last week about the outlook for pheasant hunting, the agency releasing its 2024 August roadside surveys. I guess kind of almost exactly like we predicted. We had a mild winter. That's good for pheasants. But we had pretty lousy nesting conditions thanks to all of that rain. And it's looking like, at best, kind of a wash to 2023, which was not a bad pheasant hunting year in Minnesota. But is that an accurate summary, you think?
Yep. Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with any of that. The numbers were so close with the index, the counting index, I guess they call it, that it's basically unchanged from last year. There were some regional changes in bird counts, nothing major that I could tell. But yeah, that's basically what it came down to. Winter was great. Everybody was excited, pheasant hunters anyway. Then along came spring and pheasant chicks hatched, and then the rains came. So some good with some bad, and we're back to basically where we were a year ago.
Now, Tim, you tell me if you think I'm wrong here, but the DNR release pointing out that Pheasant numbers increased the most in the East Central region, 70%. That sounds great. Pheasant numbers declined in the Southwest, 29%. Yeah, that's not so good. Isn't a 29% drop in the Southwest a whole lot more birds than a 70% increase in the East Central region? I mean, there's just not that many birds in the East Central portion of the state. So a 70% increase doesn't represent that many birds. Whereas in the Southwest, that's the heart of our pheasant range. A 29% drop, that's a pretty big chunk. Am I right?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, when you're talking low numbers to start with in the East Central and and they jump up 70%, you know, that, and this is no reflection on my math ability, but let's say you're going from 9 to 14, you know, roughly. In the Southwest, you're going from, say, 85 per route to, say, in the mid-70s. And that's off because right in the release it says it's 82 birds per 100 miles in the Southwest. So
this
I should have just used real numbers. So it must have been in the low 90s probably last year.
Right.
So yeah, it's a pretty big jump. But when you're talking the area of the state with the highest bird numbers, it might be noticeable, all things being equal, but it'll come down to fall weather, crop harvest, things like that, like it always does.
Well, the pheasant hunting season opens at 9 a.m. on Saturday, October 12th, and we are going to look at the glass half full here and say that it's, you know, despite a pretty tough summer, we had a mild winter, and we're hoping it's going to be just as good in 2024 as it was in 2023. You buy that, Spielman?
Yes, I do. I'm always optimistic. You don't have to talk me into it. It's pheasant hunting.
All right. Yeah, good. You listen to Outdoor News Radio. Rob Dreisein with Tim Spielman kicking off this week's broadcast. We talked pheasants here for a moment. We should talk about the bear kill. That got off to a pretty good start. And again, I think we kind of predicted that with the lack of natural food out there. Sounds like bear hunters, the bears are coming into the baits. I think we had, you know, one guide tell us that, you know, typically you shoot a bear off a bait and then you kind of leave it alone. You don't expect much for a couple of days. He said the bears were back like immediately. That's a sign that they're hungry, and it's going to be a pretty sizable kill in 2024.
Yeah, even in our hunting and fishing report this week, one of the themes was when Glenn, our reporter, talked bear hunting. It was a lot fewer bear hunters are in the woods, and the reason is they're not giving up, but they've got their bears. And I think a really telling number was as of about a week and a weekend into the season, roughly. We were at 2,600 bears killed, and last year at the same time, it was just over 1,000.
Wow.
So last year and this year, if you want a case study in what natural foods do to affect bear behavior, look at 2003 and then look at, 2023 and then look at 2024, and it's just a night and day difference. So I don't think when I talked to Dan Stark, the DNR's large carnivore specialist, I believe is his title, we talked a little bit historically, and there were times in the 90s when bear harvest was up in the 5,000s in Minnesota, and we won't get there. There's not as many hunters and fewer bears, even though this is a great year. So, but we'll probably end up in the mid-3,000, 3,500 perhaps, which is, again, that's almost double last year. Last year was a total harvest of 1,800 bears.
Oh, that's great. I'm glad bear hunters are having some success. Yeah, we got a healthy bear population in this region. And a bear population that we've talked about is slowly expanding around the state. It's very gradual, but it definitely seems to be happening on a gradual pace. Tim, before we go, I thought there was an interesting letter to the editor, someone pointing out that why didn't the DNR create a crossbow license? And I think you and I have talked about that a little bit in the past, but it circled back to me a little bit when we've got the agency doing this work trying to find new revenue sources. Man, oh man, there was one that was slapping them right across the face. They could have created a new crossbow license, charged people an extra $5 or something, and that would have been a nice new chunk of revenue for the agency that, in my opinion, they really let slip by.
Well, I go back to the legislation itself. I think the DNR was, and again, I'm not, here's the way I read it. The DNR was doing what the legislature told the DNR to do. The DNR didn't, I mean, considering the fact that legislation didn't receive a hearing and passed, perhaps the DNR, if there would have been a hearing, if they had a chance to testify, may have said, well, we'd like to have this tool to gauge harvest via crossbow, and we'd like to, you know, make a little money in the process and charge an extra crossbow permit. Doesn't have to be a lot, but something. So I honestly, I don't know if the DNR had say in the matter. I mean, you can change those things. The next legislative session, maybe the DNR could do it some other way. But my impression was that they did what they were told. So whether or not it would have been possible to get that income, get better information, I guess I'm not sure.
A potential crossbow season, Tim, had never gotten a hearing before in the legislature, to your knowledge?
Well, I'm going back. I'm not going to say never. I just go back to the session when that bill passed.
Yeah, yeah. To me, it seemed like the crossbow thing has been creeping its way toward Minnesota for the better part of a decade. I mean, it's certainly Michigan and Wisconsin. And you know, even if it hadn't gotten a hearing, I would argue the DNR should have anticipated this a little bit better, seen this one coming. And said, you know, if it's going to happen, let's you know, make a few bucks. And Tim, I'd argue, I think after 2 years now, it might be difficult to tell all those crossbow folks you're going to pay another $3 or $5. There'd be a lot more backlash now than there would be had they done it before they offered people the new opportunity.
Well, yeah, it's always better to do something like that on the front end. And yeah. To your point, Wisconsin's had full crossbow inclusion, if that's the proper phrase, for several years now.
Oh, yeah.
If it happens in Wisconsin, it's going to work its way across the river eventually, and you should anticipate those things, yes.
And proof in our Michigan paper, I think last week, Tim, I forget the stat, it's like 69 or 70% of people during the bow hunting season in Michigan now are using crossbows. I mean, old school recurves and longbows and even compounds are becoming kind of rare in the tree stands over in Michigan.
Well, let's watch that come west and be ready for it, I guess.
Exactly. All right, Tim, good segment. Thanks for spending some time with me. We'll talk to you next week.
Yep, sounds good.
All right, Tim Spielman, editor at Minnesota Outdoor News. Stick around. We're going to talk with Captain Adam Carey from DNR Enforcement when we return. This is Outdoor News Radio.
Hunting season will be here before you know it, and it's time to get ready for your next adventure with the OnX Hunt app. Whether you're traveling in search of roosters, elk, waterfowl, or looking to score on a whitetail close to home, OnX Hunt can help you be more successful this season. Route, plan, and navigate with private and public land boundaries, recent imagery, offline maps, and Minnesota-specific hunt layers. Download the Hunt app on the App Store or Google Play and join the millions of hunters that trust OnX Hunt.
Ready for your next fishing adventure? Look no further than Lake City, Minnesota. Located in southeast Minnesota, nestled along the shores of Lake Pepin, this charming town offers some of the best fishing in the Midwest. Whether you're a seasoned angler or just starting out, Lake Pepin is teeming with walleye, bass, and more. And when you're not on the water, explore Lake City's quaint shops, delicious dining, and scenic beauty. Go to visitlakecity.org today and plan your trip to Lake City, Minnesota's South Shore.
Wildlife Forever, a national conservation organization, has partnered with Green Lights Recycling to create mailback recycle kits. A teaspoon of mercury can pollute a 20-acre lake forever. LED and fluorescent lights contain mercury and need to be disposed of properly to protect our environment. Mail your lights, batteries, and other hazardous materials from anywhere in the U.S. to be disposed of safely. Go to wildlifeforever.org to learn more about the mailback recycling program.
Since 1967, generations of Minnesota sportsmen have trusted Outdoor News to keep them up to date with the latest news, pro tips, features, fishing reports, gear reviews, and more. For less than a buck per week, you can carry on the tradition and join thousands of Minnesota sportsmen by subscribing to Outdoor News. Whether you prefer a printed copy in your mailbox each week or the convenience of up-to-the-minute news on your smartphone or computer, we've got you covered. Subscribe today at outdoornews.com/subscribe.
As farmers and ranchers, stewardship of the land comes naturally. You help keep water clean, improve the soil, and provide habitat for wildlife. But did you know conservation can also improve your bottom line? Learn more at conservationpays.org.
Why should you take a Minnesota DNR firearm safety course? Hi, this is DNR Conservation Officer Adam Block. Many states require hunters to furnish evidence of having completed a hunter education course before issuing a non-resident license. Don't let your next trip to your favorite hunting spot be cut short because of your lack of education. Take a DNR hunter education course. For more information, call 800-366-8917.
Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, a nationwide group working to keep public lands in public hands so future generations can enjoy what we enjoy. Join the group that makes a difference. Check us out at backcountryhunters.org.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Outdoor News Radio. Rob Dreisling with you for another segment. Thanks so much for tuning in. I hope you like the broadcast. If you do, check us out online at outdoornews.com or give us a call at 800-535-5191. You can subscribe to print or digital versions of Outdoor News. That way you can have Outdoor News downloaded every Wednesday right into an app on your phone. Instant access that way. It's very handy. Or you can get good old-fashioned print delivered to your mailbox 52 times per year. Makes a great holiday gift. Hey, I want to talk about the fact that hunting seasons are underway and enforcement, DNR enforcement. This is a busy time of year for those folks. And here to talk to us a little bit about that is Captain Aaron Carey. He's the Enforcement Division's Administrative Manager based here in the Twin Cities. And I appreciate him carving some time out to chat with us now. Captain Carey, thanks so much for joining me. Like I say, busy time of year for the Enforcement Corps.
Yeah, it is. And thanks for having me. Yeah, this is the... We kind of joke that the fall time of the year is our Super Bowl, so to speak, because it's usually when we have when we're the busiest and our guys are out in the field the most. So.
Officer Carey, you spent some time in the field. You said, were you in the Lake Minnetonka area?
Yeah, that's correct. I was assigned to Lake Minnetonka Station for just under 7 years.
And now you're more in the administrative role at Central Office, I presume. Do you still get out in the field? I presume that's maybe part of the fun part of the job when you're able to get a field these days.
Yeah, being a game warden at heart, I don't get in the field nearly as much as I used to. But I try to get out, you know, especially this time of year, because like I said, it's really busy for our folks. And oftentimes we have vacant stations that need covering and things like that. So I do my best to get out in the field and help the staff cover those areas and take care of the calls and just be out and visible for the public.
And do we have another academy coming up next year? I don't know if you can speak to that, Officer Carey, but I know we always go out of our way to print in Outdoor News when there's another academy coming up. Seems like they're happening fairly regularly because, like you say, there's always vacancies in the Enforcement Corps.
Yeah, we've had vacancies probably pretty consistently since I got hired in 2007, and we've run academies pretty much every year. It's a little early yet to be 100% confident, but our plan right now is to have another academy in the spring and summer of 2025.
Good. Glad to hear it. Nice to see some fresh-faced officers hitting the field. I'm a little embarrassed to admit, I didn't know that there was this Minnesota TIP app available. And Joe Albert mentioned it to me. He's the Enforcement Division's Communications Officer. And I downloaded it, and it's pretty darn handy. And I think everybody should have this app on their phone. Tell us a little bit about it. It's been around a couple of years. Is that right, Officer Carey?
Yeah, first off, I'd agree. I mean, I work for the DNR, and I have it downloaded on my phone. But, we started it kind of a soft opening around deer season in 2022. And then spring of 2023 is when we really started pushing it, encouraging people to use it. And it is very slick. With a couple pushes of a button and type in a few words, you can send a tip anonymously to our officers, and you can include anything from locations, descriptions of what happens, to photos, videos. If people have taken screenshots of other apps and sent those in, and it's really quite a handy way to get in touch with our supervisor, or not with our supervisors, with our conservation officers. It also allows the reporter to be completely anonymous. Our officers don't have any idea who it is on the other end when they're chatting back and forth through this app, unless, of course, the person would tell them. And it's really a handy way to get a tip to us.
Yeah, you just go to the App Store and search MN Tip. That stands for Turn In Poachers. It's not a real complex app that's going to consume a lot of space on your phone. So you just download this. There's a home screen that says submit a tip. You hit that, and then it asks you your location, which is handy. You can hit allow once if you want. That way it zooms in immediately on where you are, and that helps, I presume, law enforcement determine where the issue is occurring, the potential violation. And like you say, then there's subject, location, description. The more details, the better. I suppose if you see a poached deer, if you see signs of poaching, you can take a photo with your phone and attach that image. And that's a lot of information you're getting very quickly, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, some of these tips of, you know, just with the first submission that we've gotten through the app has been enough information for us to be able to go forth and do an investigation and make an arrest in a poaching case. And it's very handy. And if our officers have questions, They reply through our end of the app, and it basically comes to you as a text message, and you can reply just like you're sending a text message to a family or friends.
And, of course, there's always the Turn and Poachers hotline, 800-652-9093. If folks want to, they don't want to mess around with an app, if that's a little too complicated for some folks out there, we print that Turn and Poachers number on the front of every edition of Outdoor News. So pick up a copy of Outdoor News or please subscribe, and you will always have very quick, easy access to that phone number, 800-652-9093. But the app is just a new piece of technology. Takes it to the next level, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. And it's monitored 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So whenever you, if you're out of cell service and you get some information and some pictures, and you later that night, you can send in the information and somebody will get it forwarded to the officer immediately. So we monitor 24/7, just like we do our tip hotline.
What's the response been from the public to that app? Like you say, it's been around a couple of years. You find a lot of any metrics, how many people have downloaded it, how many times it's been used, how does it compare to the tip hotline? Are most people still using the hotline number, or are you seeing people use the app?
Oh, I think right now it's about 50-50. You know, okay. We don't have a real good metric of who uses the hotline number versus who uses the app, but it seems like we've been getting a lot more tips through the app, especially this spring and summer, than we were through the hotline, and it's kind of slowly increased. The initial rollout, we only had a few hundred people download it, but it quickly grew into the thousands and tens of thousands of people that have downloaded it. So it's a popular thing, and it seems to be growing in popularity the longer it's in existence.
You listen to Outdoor News Radio. I'm Rob Jerisa, and we are chatting with Captain Aaron Carey, Enforcement Admin Manager for the DNR Division of Enforcement. We appreciate him carving out some time to chat with us. Hunting seasons are underway. We're already more than a week into the bear hunting season, mourning dove season. The early teal hunt has already come and gone. It is the youth waterfowl weekend is underway. And next weekend, hard to believe, arguably one of the biggest openers that we have on our calendar is that archery deer hunt. We've got crossbows are a part of that now. I'm sure you guys have already been busy, but I got to think that weekend is where it really cranks up.
Yeah, that weekend is, you know, it also coincides usually with the small game opener. And between those two seasons kicking off that are both incredibly popular, for a lot of folks, it's their first chance of the year to get out in the woods and get the hunting season started, so to speak. And it is a pretty big weekend for us.
I'm curious, have you been afield? Have you seen a lot of crossbows? It sure seems like the crossbow use has really accelerated. A lot of archers have decided to go that route. Is that consistent with what some of the officers are seeing afield?
Yeah, I would say we probably see a quarter of the archers now using crossbows, and it seems to be increasing a little bit every year. And it's a good tool, and it's a different method of hunting. And what I've noticed in my 24 years of conservation law enforcement is whenever a new tool comes out, it gets really, really popular right away, and then it kind of levels off after that. And I think we're just in that part where we're really seeing the popularity of those things increase.
Now, Officer Carey, you know, I'm the journalist who likes the big bust, right? I like the big stories. You know, those are the ones that that people like to click on. They like to see in the newspaper. But most of the what you might call bread and butter violations, I presume that you guys see a field, tend to be just people forgetting, maybe doing dumb things, being lazy, being a little sloppy out there. Can you speak to that a little bit? If folks want to go out and have a good experience and not go home with a ticket, what are some of the basic things they should be avoiding so that they have a good experience afield?
Probably the biggest thing is just remembering your license. By and large, that's probably the biggest violation we run across is, yeah. You know, they'll stick it in their wallet, or especially when it comes to fall, they'll stick it in their tackle box in the summer, and then they'll forget to grab it and put it in their hunting gear, and they won't have their license with them. You know, so just double checking those things. And if you're going to waterfowl hunt, make sure that you got your plug in your gun, make sure that you've got blaze orange for the small game season and things like just some simple things like that is what we run into mostly. It's people that are trying to do the right thing and try to be, you know, and legal as safe as they can be, and they just forget one of these little minute details that goes along with it.
I talk a lot about, you know, technology, new technology, and the pressure it puts on fisheries or even on hunting. What's it like from the enforcement perspective dealing with some of this new technology out there that, frankly, outpaces some of the technology that enforcement can even own to counter it, you might say. I'm thinking things like cell phones for hunting and forward-facing sonar, that's obviously legal. But do you feel like it is like a technological arms race out there a little bit sometimes with hunters and anglers?
Yeah, you know, I think I've seen that throughout my career. I've always joked that at some point you think the law of supply and demand would kick in and some of this would level off. But yeah, there's new technologies every year, and it's sometimes really hard for us to even keep up with what that new technology is. And every year we run into something out in the field that we've never seen or heard from before, mm-hmm. or heard about before. And we have to kind of go back and do some research on it and see if it's even something they're supposed to be able to use or legally able to use. Or, you know, sometimes if there's a regulation that even covers it, some things are so unique, there isn't a cut and dried answer as to whether, yeah, you should can use it or no, you can't use it. And then we have to do some research, and we're constantly trying to catch up and keep the, you know, the regulations and everything fair and up to date with the newest technologies.
Well, Officer Carey, thanks so much for carving out some time to spend with me early in the season. Obviously, you and the entire enforcement division are incredibly busy. Let's circle back real quick. Just want to encourage folks to download this MNTIP app on their phone. It's very small, won't occupy a lot of space on your phone, but it's just really handy to have. If you encounter a violation, a field, or maybe the what's left of a violation, a carcass or something like that, really quick, easy way to record the information. Like you say, maybe you're out of cell phone range, you can record it. Then when you get back to your Wi-Fi or whatever, it'll upload then, and you can report violations. It'll help Minnesota DNR enforcement folks like Captain Carey do their jobs better.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for having me. I enjoyed it.
We appreciate that. Thanks so much for joining us. That was Captain Aaron Carey from the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources Enforcement Division. Appreciate him joining us. With that, let's grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages.
Is a trip to Alaska on your bucket list? It's time to dump that bucket and buy your ticket. And while you're there, fish the Kenai River with Jason's Guide Service. Jason is considered the best when it comes to catching Alaskan salmon, rainbow trout, and char. He's one of only a few guides that has the permit to fish in the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge, where the salmon are easy targets and the trout and char are plentiful. So cross that Alaskan fishing trip off your list and check out jasonsguideservice.com. That's jasonsguideservice.com.
Fort Dodge, Iowa, outdoor and entertainment adventures are awaiting you. Discover Iowa's largest off-highway vehicle park, Gypsum City OHV Park, with 60 miles of trails, mudding areas, tracks, and an obstacle course. The area also boasts water, paved mountain bike, and equestrian trails. Head into town to enjoy public art and studios, an orchard, aquatic center, and family entertainment venue. Fill up with excellent Korean cuisine, pizza, ice cream, craft beer, or local wines. For more information, visit DodgeTheOrdinary.com.
Attention hunters, are you ready to take your hunting game to the next level? OutdoorNews.com is your ultimate hunting partner. Stay up to date with the latest hunting trends, gear reviews, and expert tips from seasoned hunters. OutdoorNews.com provides the most comprehensive hunting news to ensure you're always in compliance with local laws. Whether you're a seasoned pro or a beginner, OutdoorNews.com is for you. We're passionate about preserving our hunting heritage and fostering responsible hunting practices. OutdoorNews.com, where hunters become legends.
Hey, Steve Panaz here. For too long, Minnesota anglers have not had a strong voice at the legislature or the DNR. You can help ensure the quality of state fisheries by joining the MinFish Sport Fishing Foundation. Individual memberships are free, and life memberships are available. MinFish Foundation is dedicated to restoring, protecting, and enhancing Minnesota sport fishing opportunities. To join us, visit min-fish.com.
Thinking about buying or selling rural real estate in Minnesota? Whitetail Properties Real Estate is the premier brokerage for buying or selling hunting land, farmland, and country homes. With local professionals and a national presence, no other brokerage can provide you with the same buying or selling experience as Whitetail Properties. To learn more about the current real estate market or connect with your local land specialist, stop by their booth at the upcoming Minnesota Deer and Turkey Classic or visit whitetailproperties.com.
The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. You stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
Welcome back, everybody. Outdoor News Radio. I am Rob Jerisline. Happy to be with you. Hope you like the broadcast. If you do, check us out online at outdoornews.com. You can also give us a call at 800-535-5191. Subscribe to our print or digital versions by getting in touch with us. Outdoor News makes a great holiday gift. This coming weekend, believe it or not, is already the archery deer opener here in Minnesota. And I thought a fun new guest to chat about that is Eric Morkin. Eric is actually the web editor at Outdoor News, but he's a hardcore deer hunter, especially via stick and string. Believe it or not, he's already been out bow hunting this year, just not in Minnesota. There's another nearby state that has an earlier opener, and Eric's taken advantage of that. Thought I'd get him on here to talk some tips about early season bow hunting. Eric, thanks a lot for joining me on the broadcast.
Thanks for having me, Rob. Looking forward to chatting about it.
Eric, how long, you're a fairly young guy. I don't know, what are you, in your 30s, something like that. How long have you been bow hunting? Does it go back to when you were a teenager? Did you start out bow hunting, or were you a gun hunter who kind of made the switch? It seems like that's how it happens with a lot of folks.
It is. That's how it happened with me a lot too. I grew up in southern Minnesota and did the classic shotgun hunting thing. And I did, I guess, try my hand at bow hunting just a little bit when I was a teenager with a friend of my dad's who helped take me out one season, and went through college and kind of didn't really do much bow hunting during college. But then immediately after I graduated from college, I decided to get my own bow, and I basically have never looked back. I fell in love with it from there. And I've been, I'm 39 now. So going on 18 years here of basically strictly bow hunting.
The one thing I know about bull hunting, I worked for a bull hunting magazine for several years, is to do it right, it takes a lot of time. I kind of got out of it for that reason. I just don't have the time to devote to doing it properly. There's a lot of bow tuning. There's a lot of practice. And then there's, frankly, just a lot of sitting up in stands waiting for a deer to come within range.
Mm-hmm. It is. I love that part about it, actually. The one thing I love about bow hunting is that actually pretty much all year round, it gives me something to look forward to almost every day. I shoot all the time. I'm shooting in my shop after the season's over in the winter. I have an actual target set up in my basement where I'm just going through rups with my bow at, you know, just 12 yards and stuff. And then obviously during the summer months, I'm shooting. And then I'm scouting all the time. Pretty much. It's just something that I've grown to love. So it never feels like work to me. It's probably better to be more balanced as an outdoorsman sometimes, I feel like, but it kind of bit me, and it's something that I love to do basically all year round, is something that has to do with archery whitetail hunting.
A huge advantage of whitetail deer archery hunting, there's a couple big advantages. One, we have a lot of whitetail deer. Yeah, even the population down compared to a few years ago, we still have a lot of deer to hunt. They're fairly accessible. They live near our communities, especially you live in western Minnesota, so you've got a lot of access to good hunting near you. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is they're long seasons, right? I mean, this year's archery deer season starts this Saturday, September 14th, and goes till the end of the year. That's a lot of recreation for what's a bow license cost these days? $26, something like that?
Yep, right around there. And you're right. That's what got me fired up about it, is because I loved deer hunting growing up as a kid, but it was like I only got to spend that however one weekend or whatever it might be, two weekends deer hunting. And that's what really got me into it to begin with, is I was just like, I want to see how deer are moving naturally, and I want to be able to hunt these deer and be in the woods for weeks and weeks and months throughout the course. And the cool thing about archery season is, you know, we start here in the early season, and deer may be acting, well, they will be acting completely differently than what you're going to see, you know, as you lead up to the rut, as you go through the rut, as they've been pressured, and you see how deer are acting in the late season. So you really get to learn about deer by just being out there with them in the woods and stuff. And I think that's one thing that's, it's really, you know, given to me over the years, is really, it's given me an appreciation for whitetails that I maybe didn't have before when I just spent a couple weekends out in the woods with them.
Yeah, and part of my overarching point is that if you want to be an outdoors person, take advantage of what you have near you. If I lived in western Montana, I'd be on the Missouri River fishing trout all the time, or elk, right? Those are the great opportunities you have near you out there. If I lived on the coast, I'd be enjoying saltwater fishing all the time. Here in Minnesota, we got whitetails and we got a long archery season. You want to enjoy a lot of outdoor recreation and have access, you know, to great hunting. The good old whitetail deer, you almost can't beat it. It's a very savvy creature, especially to hunt via bow, right? That was something I always liked about bow hunting, was I felt like I was hunting whitetail deer at their best. There's not a lot of other people in the woods. These deer are behaving the way deer normally do. You know, during the gun deer season, they're running crazy, right? Everyone's chasing them with a shotgun. When you're bow hunting, you're seeing deer behave like deer, and you're seeing them, you know, they're smart, they're savvy, they're tough to hunt, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, that's what is so cool about it, is you really watch deer do what deer want to do. Mm-hmm. You start realizing patterns, you realize how they want to bed, you realize how they use wind. I've grown to always think of how I think of a whitetail, and how I've, just by watching them over the years, is I always think that humans, we live by our eyes, and we like, that's why you see like tower blinds and stuff overlooking huge fields all the time, right? You see that when you go down the interstate. It's because we like to see things and see long distances and stuff, because we kind of live by our eyes. Well, a deer is going to almost throughout the entire season live by its nose like we live by our eyes. Mm-hmm. So when I'm thinking about how deer move, I'm looking at the cover and thinking, how can this deer move from point A to point B using its nose as its primary scent? So yeah, it's little things like that that you pick up just by being in the woods with them all the time. So
my dad's a hardcore bow hunter, and he said, yeah, it's all about the nose. It's all about playing the wind, understanding that that's what deer are using to move about. You look at a deer's head, it's all nose, right?
Yeah.
And they don't have terrible vision. They've got good vision, probably not as good as the wild turkeys, but that's a whole other story. You're listening to Outdoor News Radio. I'm Rob Jerisa, and we're chatting with Eric Morkin. Eric is a hardcore bow hunter, so he's very excited about this weekend's archery deer opener here in Minnesota. He's also the web editor here at Outdoor News. Now, like I alluded to, you've already actually been bow hunting. You're so hardcore, and you live in Western Minnesota. You got access to a couple other states that you like to hit, huh?
I do. I start my year usually in North Dakota. I will spend the second weekend of September, so the weekend ahead of the Minnesota archery season, I'll get out to South Dakota. I really like hunting the Dakotas, and then if I can make it work between the three states, the Dakotas and Minnesota, I also love hunting Missouri. I like to try to find states that, you know, have good whitetail populations, and I've got a young family and wife and everything like that, so I'm trying to find areas that are somewhat within close proximity to my place and stuff that still offer me great opportunities. So kind of found that in the Dakotas and to an extent Missouri too, even though that's a little bit of a longer drive. So
that North Dakota season opens, what is it, 2 weeks earlier than Minnesota?
Yeah, it was. So this year, the South Dakota season opened on September 1st. And if I've got my dates, it was last Friday that the North Dakota season opened. I believe it was August 30th. It's always that Friday before Labor Day, I believe, in North Dakota. So
that is so early. And sometimes you'll see pictures of guys hunting North Dakota and they'll have a buck in velvet. Because it's so early, sometimes you'll be able to bag a buck that's still got velvet on its antlers. You ever pulled that one off?
I did 2 years ago, 2022 season. The biggest buck I've ever shot was in full velvet. It was on the second day of the North Dakota season. I saw him at 20 yards on opening night, didn't have a shot at him because it was too thick of cover. And the next evening I made a move on him, kind of from scouting, had an idea where I figured he was bedding in a little oxbow on the river. And I used kind of heavy winds to get a little closer to him and ended up getting a shot at him from about less than 5 yards. So yeah, it was a biggest buck I've ever shot. He's actually the only deer I've decided to, it was worth a mount and stuff. Okay. And he's sitting above me right now.
So, he's looking at you as we speak. Good.
Yeah, that was a cool hunt and stuff. And yeah, it's kind of like the bucket list item, I think, for a lot of whitetail hunters who maybe have later archery openers. You're not going to find bucks in velvet in Minnesota on opener. Right. Very, very seldom will that happen. It's fun as a guy from Minnesota to be able to go out and shoot a big velvet buck for sure.
How tough is getting access for deer hunting, especially early bow hunting like that in the Dakotas? Something tells me it might not be that hard because most landowners out there are so focused on pheasants and duck hunters from Minnesota coming. Maybe they see a guy like you wants to come and deer hunt. They say, yeah, go ahead. We want you to shoot the deer out here.
that sometimes is the case. I feel like it's gotten harder. Let's put it this way. I try really hard at it. I get a lot of no's, but it just takes one yes. That's kind of my mindset. If you get that one yes, and that's what I did in some of these neighboring states, is I got that one yes through a lot of no's. That gets your foot in the door. And once you do that, it's worth going out there. And then you can just kind of try to piece together more permissions by going and knocking on a few more doors. But it's definitely become harder. I think anybody who tries this will tell you that. It's very difficult in Minnesota, I found.
Right.
Just because if they don't hunt, they've got a family member who hunts and things like that. And that is starting to be what you run into in almost every state, it feels like. So, and then, you know, leasing has become very popular, things like that. So I would say it's doable, but difficult. That's kind of how it's been for me over the years.
Eric, before we run out of time, like I say, this Saturday, September 14th, is the archery deer opener here in Minnesota. Some people don't take that early season real seriously. They say, wait till the rut. Hardcore guys like you and me know that early season is very good. Why will you definitely be out in a stand this Saturday?
You know, let's say you're going after a buck. It offers an opportunity to get after a deer before they've seen that pressure. I got out, it'll be similar in Minnesota here, where what I've seen is that, like, beans, for instance, in my neck of the woods are really holding on to green. So if you can sit back and kind of watch and see where these deer are coming out, where they're feeding, things like that, you have an opportunity to strike on a deer that isn't expecting it. I've become very mobile in how I hunt, and I've really become a firm believer in the power of surprise when it comes to shooting deer. And at no point in the season is a deer more going to be more surprised to see you than this first weekend and everything like that. They just haven't seen the pressure yet. I call it their summer. They're going through their summer thing. Like this past weekend in North Dakota, I watched a huge buck come out and with just some other deer on this huge, huge field system. He came out and fed, and he just was doing his summer thing. He wasn't concerned. He walked, he traveled about 100 yards along that tree edge and everything like that. In broad daylight, an hour before dark, you're going to get situations where if you do your homework, if you can kind of sit back and monitor and see how deer are using the landscape, you can kind of strategically strike at this time of year. And it's just a good opportunity to get after some deer that haven't been pressured yet.
Eric, in 30 seconds or less, any weather factors that you're thinking about this year? The past couple of years, I got to think water was a factor when we were dealing with drought. You know, you were probably trying to find areas with water where deer might be congregating. That's got to be a non-factor this year with all the water on the landscape in 2024.
Yeah, non-factor this year and almost everywhere that I know I'll be hunting. I'm hunting in every weather condition, and truthfully, that goes throughout the season. I'm the type of guy who my firm belief is that if you understand where deer want to spend the majority of their time in daylight and feel comfortable being on their feet in daylight, you're going to give yourself a chance if you can get tight to that type of cover. If it's south winds at 30 miles an hour and 85 degrees, you know, on Minnesota's opener, I'm out there, and I'm just going to try to get myself close to where I think deer are bedding and try to intercept them as they go to feed or something like that and take my chances with it.
The most important factor is to be out there hunting, right?
Yep, that's correct.
Well, Eric, thanks a lot for joining us. I'd encourage folks, outdoornews.com or the print version of Outdoor News. Eric writes quite frequently about white-tailed deer hunting with a lot of tips, so you can gain more insight from him by checking out those sources. Eric, good luck this weekend, and we'll stay in touch. Looking forward to seeing some nice big buck photos from you.
All right. Thanks, Rob. Thanks for having me.
Eric Morgan from Outdoor News, hardcore archery deer hunter, who will be out this Saturday, September 14th for the archery deer opener. Let's break. More of the broadcast after these messages.
Hunting season will be here before you know it, and it's time to get ready for your next adventure with the OnX Hunt app. Whether you're traveling in search of roosters, elk, waterfowl, or looking to score on a whitetail close to home, OnX Hunt can help you be more successful this season. Route, plan, and navigate with private and public land boundaries, recent imagery, offline maps, and Minnesota-specific hunt layers. Download the Hunt app on the App Store or Google Play and join the millions of hunters that trust OnX Hunt.
Since 1967, Outdoor News has been Minnesota's go-to news source for all things out of doors. Generations of hunters and anglers have welcomed Outdoor News into their home each week, enjoying the most up-to-date news, features, columnists, fishing and hunting reports, gear reviews, and much, much more. For less than a dollar a week, you can join thousands of other Minnesota sportsmen and continue the long-standing tradition of subscribing to Outdoor News. Both print and digital versions are available. Start your subscription today at outdoornews.com/subscribe.
Every 2 seconds, someone special needs blood. A friend, a family member, a coworker. Someday, it could be you. In fact, right now, patients in local hospitals are relying on Memorial Blood Centers to be there with the blood they need to survive. And that means we're relying on you to step up and make a life-saving difference. Make a date to help save a life. Visit mbc.org today to make an appointment to donate blood. That's mbc.org.
Hi, I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you prevent wildfires.
Dude, I've got this. I've been camping since I was 5 years old.
But I am a camping influencer.
You know what? I'll bet you $5. Assistant Smokey, what is the best way to put out a campfire?
To put out a campfire, drown with water, stir, drown again. Then make sure the fire is out cold by feeling with the back of your hand.
Wait, really?
I'll take the $5.
Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Every year, millions of waterfowl wing their way across the continent in a display unmatched anywhere else in nature. Along the way, wetlands provide the resting places and critical resources these waterfowl need to complete their journey. But these rest areas for America's waterfowl and other wildlife are being degraded and destroyed. This is why, since 1937, Ducks Unlimited has been a world leader in wetlands conservation, ensuring safe passage for nature's most beautiful creations, protection against flooding, and sanctuary for the human soul. If we don't want to grow old in a world without wild places, we must speak up, we must step up, so that we may fill the skies for generations to come. A public service from Ducks Unlimited.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everybody. Final segment of Outdoor News Radio for this week. I'm Rob Gerisline. Thank you to our guests earlier, Eric Morkin, as well as Captain Aaron Carey from DNR Division of Enforcement. Going to check in now with our friend Tim Lesmeister. He's up in Alaska. You can read Tim in the print version of Outdoor News. Call 800-535-5191 to subscribe or check out our website, outdoornews.com. Tim, it sounds like you haven't been on the water yet. Nasty weather up there, huh?
Oh, yeah, but, you know, the fish are biting like crazy, so I'm in a bittersweet situation right now. I've become a fair-weather fisherman, and the weather's not fair, but the fish are biting like crazy. My son's a guide up here, and he's taking people out, and they're catching huge rainbow trout. The silvers are in, so they're catching cohos, pretty active bite. With these sockeye spawning and all these eggs floating around, the rainbow trout are just scarfing them up like crazy. There's some huge rainbows being caught right now. I'm going to get out. I know this weather's going to clear, but these first few days that I've been here, it has been raining and it is cold and it is miserable. And I just don't find that to be fun anymore. So in a couple of days, the sun's supposed to shine. The weather's going to warm and I'm going to go out there and I'm going to bang away at silvers, big rainbow trout, and just enjoy the beautiful scenery that surrounds me here.
Well, we'll get a report from you maybe next week on how the fishing is going, but I wanted to get your take on a couple news items. One, we had a little news filler, but I got it in all the Outdoor News editions as well as OutdoorNews.com about the Bass Angler Sportsman Society, BASS. A lot of people watching to see what they might do with forward-facing sonar if they would add some restrictions. I thought the piece they posted on their website was kind of funny. They went out of their way to say, we're not banning forward-facing sonar. And then the rest of the piece went into some, I would say, some pretty severe restrictions. Definitely, it's not going to be a free-for-all for live sonar on at the Bassmaster Classic and in their Elite Series anymore.
Well, if you've seen what some of these boats have on them, it's incredible. I think they've got more electronics than some of the armed forces have in their facilities. You know, you're talking about four huge screens, a sonar on each side, front and back. They're literally a 360-degree view.
Right.
the sonar setup that they have, and they're running high speed. So what they're doing is they're going faster. They're seeing everything. I know there are people that are telling me that they don't even watch the fishing shows anymore because all these guys do is drive around in their boats and they're looking at the screens and they're not even fishing. You know, it's gotten to the point now where it's all about finding that fish on the sonar screen before even sending out a lure to try and catch it. It is funny that they're going to allow the forward-facing sonars, but they're going to restrict them to the point where they're going to have to go fairly slow and they're only going to be able to look out one direction. So it's definitely going to hinder those that want to actually cover a lot of ground to use that equipment.
Yeah, the piece that we summarized for Outdoor News talked about, they did a lot of research. They looked at, you know, what guys were using in their boats. And I think they said on average, there were three live sonars per boat. Many had five or even six. They're restricting it now just to one. They're saying you can only have 55 inches of square inches of screen on your boat now. The other thing that jumped out at me, Tim, was they said you can only use freshwater transducers, not salt water. And you're right. I did see some notes. We posted this online. By the way, we've got a nice join the discussion portion of our website homepage at outdoornews.com where we post kind of controversial stories like this or newsy pieces and get people to chime in. And we had a couple folks chime in on this specific thing. And they both, at least one of them made that point that you just brought up, that I used to like to watch fishing shows, but now they're not fishing anymore. They're just out there, you know, looking at their screen, scanning, and it's not fun to watch anymore. And, you know, I've talked to people who say, you know, you look at bodies of water like Leech Lake these days, and no one's fishing. Everyone's just kind of cruising around looking at their screens. That's what modern recreational angling has become for a lot of people.
Although I'll be honest with you, I've fished many, many, many times with Gary Roach over the years, even when he was using a flasher in the early days. He wouldn't stop at a spot unless he saw fish on that flasher. We'd spend sometimes 2 or 3 hours just motoring around a piece of structure with him glued to that sonar, watching it very closely until he found the fish that he wanted to catch that were worth targeting. So there's an art to finding fish. It's just that now with these forward-facing sonars and the resolution that you can get with the screens and the optics, it makes it much easier to find those fish. Where before it could take a long time with a very small cone angle. Now you've got a big, huge, wide spread, and you can find fish a lot easier, and you can know exactly what size they are, sometimes what species they are. So it's a different ball game. There's no doubt about it. But I think for people that knew how to find fish in the past, nothing much has changed.
Outdoor News Radio, Rob Gerisline with Tim Lesmeister, wrapping up the show. A couple minutes left here with Tim. I see the 2025 State Waterfowl Stamp winner was announced. Mankato artist Kurt Kegler came in first place with an acrylic painting of a cackling goose. I guess that was what was required on the stamp this year, right? Don't they say every year they tell artists this is the species you have to choose, or maybe you can choose between two or three? And I know sometimes they'll say, like, well, we've never done this species before, so everybody's got to do this species this year. I wonder if that's what happened with this cackling goose, and it still kind of stopped me. I don't think I've ever seen cacklers in Minnesota. I associate those with the Pacific Flyway.
Exactly. I don't think I've ever seen a cackling goose stamp as long as I've been hunting. So it seems to me that this is something that is very new, original. It's got to be something that is obviously somebody came up with the idea. Let's do a cackler. It's never been done before. And that's why they probably decided that was the way to go. But it's a beautiful piece of art. I mean, the guy did a phenomenal job.
I think we do get them in Minnesota. We get a few of them. I think we've had some writers talk about it. I've never seen them, so there's waterfowlers out there who know more about it than me who've probably seen some cacklers in Minnesota, but they look kind of like a little miniature Canada goose. They're just a smaller subspecies of our Canada goose. Well, Tim, we're out of time. Thanks for spending this segment with me. Safe travels. We'll talk to you next week. Hope you catch some fish.
Yeah, I got to get out here in a couple of days and see if I can't get some of those monster rainbows. That's the thing I love.
Awesome. Well, good luck, Tim. Thanks a lot. That's our buddy Tim Lesmeister. Appreciate him joining us. Thanks to him, everyone else. Everybody have a great week out of doors. Rob Gerisline signing off for Outdoor News Radio. Missed a segment from this week's edition of Outdoor News Radio? You can hear a podcast of the complete program at OutdoorNews.com or via your favorite podcast streaming platforms. And for the rest of the story on the topics we cover here on the program, get yourself or a friend a subscription to Outdoor News. Just visit OutdoorNews.com. And don't forget to join us next week on this station to talk everything out of doors.